Blog Talk Radio.
Play Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Chefs, Chefs.
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present.
What?
Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it. That's hometown, the home state, home sweet home. It's your boy TP Timeless back in the kitchen. The calling number is 929-477-2759. You are here with the chefs. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world. Y'all are here with Sports City. I'm feeling some type of way. Sports City, I don't usually do this. I try to remove my bias as best as possible. I try to stay away from people and teams that I love, things that have a personal attachment to me. But I promise you today that this show will get personal. This show will get personal. And I'm going to do as best as I can to try and get through a lot of the topics and the, you know, appetizing meat potatoes of the show. But the sit-down dish, the entree, is the talk that I get to have with Detroit and the way things are panning out for the Lions. And I really can't wait till, you know, I start to fill this kitchen up as best as possible, because this is a heavy topic for me. And like I said, this has been a long time coming for me. I said this is personal, and it's the spark of, like, something new. Like, I'm not saying, oh, they promised a great tomorrow, but I feel very good in getting personal. I've spent over a decade in this kitchen trying my best not to speak about the Twins as much, or speak about the Thunder as much, or speak about the Lions, or speak about the Tennessee Lady Balls, or Georgetown, or definitely Miami. I'll give you, you know, winks on, like, if Miami player doing their thing. But with this news right here, like, I feel good, and shout to the guy that did his work for as long as he could while he was in Michigan. But I don't want to spill too much of that, because I got to save it for that, you know, that good time. I don't know, there's nothing perfect. I want to say that perfect time, but that good time while we got each other here in this building. So I got my co-host for the morning going into the afternoon, Big Easy, a.k.a. Eric Gross. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, brother. I'm feeling great. Glad to be on the show this morning with you. Let's get into it, man. A lot of good things happening. Big trade went down in the NFL, so I'm excited to talk about this a little bit more.
Okay. I want to let the kitchen fill up more. I got people here already, and I got people telling me they can't wait to try to tear my head off, but I'm ready for the war. I am ready for the war. We do have calling out of the state of California, Mr. Arendis, co-host of a former show here with Brian Hughes. Welcome back. How are you feeling this morning?
Doing good, T. Ready to get cooking on this, all the good stuff happening.
Okay, so I'm going to try my best to stay away from, I know, the platter that everybody's coming to eat, and I'm willing and ready to serve that thing, and I want people to get here, because they're telling me they're going to be here, so I'm going to give them time to settle into the kitchen as best see fit. But I'm going to do something. I'm going to do a favor for the two of you guys, because it actually is another hot topic here in the building, and you two are resident Laker fans. So the Lakers were on a two-game losing streak, entering their, I guess, their best rival in the NBA for decades, if not close to half a century, of them and the Boston Celtics, in which this game came down to the wire. And, of course, how the song ends, where Taj says Connecticut, the Connecticut guy gets the ball, being Kemba Walker, and takes the game-winning shot and misses. Now, this is the crazy part about Kemba. Kemba's been out for a while. Before he took the shot, he was 1 of 11, and they could have slowed or called a timeout, and they ran with it. So I understand the scenario of trying to get LeBron and them while they're scrambling, trying to get in front for defense and make something happen, and Kemba pull up for a shot. And, you know, there's people in the corner that were wide open that Kemba didn't see, and Kemba wanted to take that shot and probably make the biggest shot of the night because he was so cold, and he still ended up missing that shot. I want to hear how you guys feel about the game, how it ended, and how the Lakers get off the snide. They could have been in front of a three-game losing streak if that shot would have failed, but it didn't. I'll start with you first, Eric, and then I'll go to Norm.
You know, a W is a W. So, you know, it was a great game from start to finish. So, you know, it happens like this in the NBA. You're going to get some game winners, and you're not going to get some game winners. Like Tobias Harris, you know, the other night in Philadelphia beat us with the last second shot. So it was overall a great game, good entertainment for the fans, and the Lakers took care of business and got a W. So good job for them.
Norm, since you're the Cali guy, your thoughts on the Lakers, how they let two games slip, being Philadelphia and Detroit, and they come home for the Boston game and get this to, you know, go their way with a one-point win up against their biggest rival in the NBA.
Yeah, I actually saw the last quarter. I was trying to make a bet because I think Lakers got like seven, and I had that feeling they're going to win the game. They're going to do all it took to win the game. But, yeah, it came down to just a final shot they easily could have lost it on. Them not calling a timeout, I think that's kind of – I think that's – it's kind of the guards changing on how they approach those final plays. A lot of times you'll see them just bring up the court. They don't want any substitutions on the defensive side, and they just try to push. And with the way the offenses score these days, sometimes it works out for your benefit. And then, of course, if you miss, you'll always get questioned why it wasn't a timeout for a set play. But – you know, I think it's just more of a rhythm feel of the game. And if they want the ball and they want to move quick without calling the timeout, that's just kind of a decision you make and you learn from if you can look back at the board, draw it differently. But yeah, the Lakers, I mean, you know, they're gonna be right there at the end again. And it's hard to continue to play at a high level. It's hard, even these pro athletes who, you know, obviously love the game and make millions doing it. It's hard to maintain high level of play day in, day out, week in, week out. So you're going to have your little lulls, and that's where your depth really shows on your team, because you need some role players to step in and have big games when the superstars are just not saying they're not putting out 100% effort, just it's off nights for them. So Lakers are going to be fine.
No, and I'm not. I don't say that as the Lakers won't be probably. Will be one of the top three teams in the Western Conference. I'm just saying, why not catch them while they're sleeping and things are going on and these guys are fighting injury? And I think the last game when Anthony Davis sat out was due to tooth situation because, you know, what happened in the Philly game in which he ended up, you know, getting a bad shot to his face, and that's what had happened. But this is a scenario where, and I said it wrong, Boston was the home team in the game. I'm saying it wrong. But this is a game where they got to have this happen. They got to win this game because, obviously, this has been the response that they've given. Oh, we're playing the Cavs. We can't beat the Cavs because LeBron's there. Oh, we're playing Toronto because Toronto's loaded. Like, no, this isn't the excuse that you're going to continue to follow. You have to play every single team in the NBA and be prepared to make this fight happen, especially while this is within your reach. The crazy part about it, I feel like they should have called a timeout. The crazy part about it is, and please, Lord, forgive me if I'm saying the wrong thing, this is the week of Kobe Bryant's death, and the player that practiced with Kobe the most out of anybody on that floor was Jason Tatum. Why not give Jason Tatum the ball while this guy's on an all-star season this year, going off and having the Celtics the way they are while Kemba has been off of the floor for quite some time? Like, I get it. Kemba is a good player, And he played ball here in Connecticut. So, you know, I got to give Kemba a ton of respect and having the moxie to want to take that shot. But if you are 1-for-11 and you're the point and you got guys out here cooking, and if you look at the play, Jaylen Brown is sitting in the corner by himself eating popcorn, drinking soda, everything else, and you don't get him the ball, it's like this is what we look at. But I understand, like, this is what they're made of. They're professional basketball players. They're going to take that shot. But he didn't make the right assessment at being a floor general, seeing the floor, and being cold. Like, and this is something that's probably going to stick with him. But I feel at least Tatum should have taken the shot. Brown has been playing good this year. Brown is considered to be an all-star this season. At least two of your guys that could have been in a scenario where it could have been taken. And also, this is something I was talking about with on another network. How long of a leash does Brad Stevens have? Like, how long does this go on while he continue to throw out that we're not ready for LeBron carrying teams? Like, I want to see how long this goes, because there's other coaches that are available that can make this happen with the cards that they're dealt.
Yeah, Ty, I just wanted to touch on that. You got Jaylen Brown averaging 27.1 points a game this year. I mean, he's just elevated his game. Yeah, and Tatum had 30 points that game, and Brown had 28. So that would have definitely been my choice. Them two guys could be getting that final shot. So, absolutely.
I'm trying to cook, brother. Look, I'm glad you eating what I'm putting out. So you understand where I'm coming from. So it's like you got to – and I don't like when people use the slogan, but this one I do understand. You got to save the player from himself. You know what I'm saying? And Brad definitely has been there enough to – he has a good basketball IQ. I don't take anything away from Brad Stevens as being a coach. But you got to see the scenario, especially up against the defending champions. Like, this is – I'm not just going to say the Lakers are a quality team. This is the team you want to beat. You got to have this game. Like, oh, we can't say, oh, we fell a point short. Like, this is something that you think Tatum, the year when LeBron was on the Cavs, they went to 7 games with the Cavs. Like, you got to think that this is something that he wants to knock off of his shoulder. Like, we face LeBron and them far too much to be losing to them and saying that we don't have enough to go to war with these guys. Yes, we do. The numbers that you just said between Tatum and Brown for what they're putting out on the season, the numbers that they had last night in the game, and Kemba's the guy with the ball to take the shot, like, I'm baffled. Like, this is something that Brad Stevens has to own up to. And then the discussion that I had last night, they try to put it on Danny Ainge. I'm like, wait, really? Like, Danny Ainge is the blame? Like, in the midst of this, like, I'm like, stop. Like, they got the pieces to make it happen. He did a good job of what he has there. We do have Aaron Simmons in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
You know what, gentlemen? I'm good, and I'm really just going to pick up what you guys left off. I'm going to go ahead and skip this a little. The intros. I disagree with both of y'all 100%. I really do. And here's why. You know what I'm saying? Kemba Walker has made that shot time and time again. This is a make or miss game. Now, if Kemba hits that shot, are we having this conversation this morning? I dare say no. Now, if Brad Stevens, you know, in the mix of the transition and the steal and the center third, calls a timeout, And that's the play he runs, then I can understand you guys' point. But for right now, we're on a fast break. They got to get a bucket up. You're catching the Lakers in transition. Kemba Walker, again, Ty, you're a Connecticut guy, okay? So you've seen Kemba Walker make that shot more times than he's missed. I can go back to a Big East championship where he crossed the dude up at MSG and drained a very similar shot. It was a quality shot. As a matter of fact, they had two shots at the win there and missed both of them. Because Tice missed the putback at the cup. So at the end of the day, I mean, we could sit here and say, well, he should have gave it to Jason Tatum, or he should have gave it to Jaylen Brown. And I mean, I get it, but Kemba Walker has made that shot time and time again, and the Boston Celtics had two shots at it and missed both of them. At the end of the day, you got to tip your cap, and the basketball gods are on their side. And if you get that shot again, I guarantee you, Kemba's making that bucket. I guarantee you, Tyson's making a layup at the cup.
Okay, I'm going to heavily disagree with you also. You have Jason Tatum shooting 12 for 18, 2 for 3 from 3. You have Jaylen Brown 13 for 19 from the floor, 2 for 4 from 3. These guys are shooting over 50%. While you have a guy before that shot was taken, he's 1-for-11, He's 0 for 5 from 3.
Exactly.
The only shot that he took good was 2 from the free throw line. And you think I'm going to let you take the shot at the end of the game in the fourth quarter and probably the biggest rivalry in the NBA? I beg to differ. I'm not going to sit here and go back and forth with you because I know we've seen Kemba take that shot. But while you got a guy that's got 30 and 28, these guys combined for damn near 60. And this guy that you're telling me that's taking a shot has 4 points to win the game right now, and he's not been on.
Excuse me, I didn't interrupt you.
The plus-minus differential was negative 8 for him on the floor. While these guys are a positive on the floor, everything that you say is heavily on the other side of the spectrum. Like, I get it. Like, Kemba has a history for hitting that shot. But right now, this isn't him, especially while he's trying to get acclimated to being back on the floor. That's extremely off. That's extremely off.
I disagree with that on so many fronts. And since you're not trying to have a go back and forth, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. But there is no way in the world that you can sit there and try to justify having Kemba Walker take that shot on a fast break. Like, again, if Brad Stevens called the timeout and ran a set play, and he ran a set play for Jaylen Brown, or he ran a set play for Jason Tatum, and Kemba Walker went rogue and takes that shot, I get your point. But you and I both have played this game long enough to know that in the middle of a fast break, you go with what works for you. Kemba Walker has made that shot. I'm not negating what Jaylen Brown's stats were. I'm not negating what Jason Tatum's stats were. They played a phenomenal game. And maybe if they can hit a redo, maybe they make that pass, or maybe they make that shot, or make a layup, or get the pass over to the corner. Keep in mind the time on the clock, okay? And Jaylen Brown was cooking so much, okay? Keep in mind Jaylen Brown had the ball, okay? He passed the ball up to the top of the key where Kemba Walker was. If Jaylen Brown was cooking so much, and if he was the guy who's supposed to take that shot so much, then why didn't he make the move and get to the bucket? He didn't. He passed the ball to Kemba. Kemba made the move. Kemba tried to hit the step back. Kemba missed the shot. Theus or Tyson, well, how do you pronounce his name? My blood brother, if you're listening, I butchered your name. He missed the layup.
Brown was right wide open in the corner for
Let
three.
Him
he,
yeah,
after he passed
say.
That ball, he got
that.
Wide open.
I wanted him to finish that. I wanted him to finish that. That's exactly what I was going to say. He's a floor general, and you know since you said we played this game all of our lives, you hit the open player. Jaylen Brown is open. He's supposed to see the perception of the whole floor, and he did not. He took the shot. That's a bad shot, and it's a step back. He's off balance, and he's 1 for 11 at the point in time on the shot. I get it. Yep. The time wasn't there. Thief should have made the layup. I agree with you. He should have made the putback layup. He didn't. But if you got an open guy that's sitting in the corner making popcorn, 13 for 19 from the floor, and you're telling me that this dude's 1 for 11, that's the point guard that's supposed to distribute to a guy that's considered to be an all-star, and he's just shooting guard? I do not get it.
So let me ask you this question, and then we can flip to Eric. So in previous shows, when we've had this discussion about why players defer to other players when they're supposed to be the guy, what have we always said? We've always said you gotta rock with what got you to the party. Kemba Walker is a shooter. Kemba Walker has made that jump shot in his sleep. In his sleep, Timely.
Well, I think that you're contradicting yourself. I can contradict you. Because this is the same scenario that you look at Russell Westbrook. You don't like Russell Westbrook, but Russell Westbrook takes that shot while he's with KD. You don't like that he took the shot. It would be the same scenario.
Russell Westbrook is not a jump shooter. Russell Westbrook has never shot well from the field. Russell Westbrook has never made that shot.
He's not hit game winners?
Are you serious? He never came down, and I mean, he hit game winners. Don't get it twisted. He hit game winners. But Kemba Walker has made that shot time and time again, and it was on a fast break. Like, again, you're missing my caveat here. If Brad Stevens called a timeout and drew up a play, and the play was to go to here or go to there, and Kemba Walker went rogue, or Kemba Walker decided to do it on himself, I would sit here, I wouldn't say anything. But it's a fast break. They didn't call a timeout. They didn't give the Lakers a chance to set up defense. They caught him in transition. As a matter of fact, I think if I remember correctly, it was a 2-on-2. They caught him in transition. Jaylen Brown gets the ball, makes the move, kicks it back up to Timberwalker. He floats out to the corner. Timberwalker sees that he has a mismatch, crosses the dude up, tries to hit a step back. He missed. Tries to get a putback. He missed. I mean, again, we all have played this game time and time again. We've all played the game. Maybe Brad Stevens should have called a timeout. Who knows?
Right. Wait, hold on. You totally just went here to just go back and forth. I said Brad Stevens. That was where I went. I said save the player from himself. I just said that. You didn't even hear that. You wanted to go back and forth about this, and I was talking about the coach in general. While you can save him from trying to make that happen, while Tim was in the storm of that, stop this. You got, and I'm saying stop this as in Brad Stevens. Like, I know this is where you want to go, and I'm not trying to go down that river. The crazy part is like, how long of a leash do they have in front of Brad Stevens while he continues to say that, oh, we don't have enough guns to go to war with LeBron James and them, when you guys have this in your hands right now? In the one game that you guys played the Lakers, because you only play a 1-on-1 because it's an East and West matchup. So, you know, the numbers don't benefit you going to L.A. when you guys play the Lakers in the Staples Center. You're going to have to out-coach Vogel right now while he has more athleticism on the other side of the ball. That's what I'm trying to say. Plus, the percentages for both Brown and Tatum heavily favor both of them taking that shot before Kemba. I get it. His brain is scrambling, and the best thing for him to do is try to create space to get the shot off. I get that point. But it's like, if Brown is cooking, you see the floor, you make that move, they're coming to you, or everybody's on you. All eyes are on you, in the words of Tupac. You can either make that pass while Jaylen is sitting there, or you're going to take the shot while you're off, and the percentages look like you're going to be off. And like I said, Tice could have made that layup. That's big. But like, again, I'm looking at Brad Stevens on the situation of him coaching. And how long of a leash does he have? Because this is a discussion I was having. Is it a 2 to 4 year window? Because he can't continue to stand on that soapbox saying that and be a team that could contend for the East and haven't been to a finals yet in the East. Like that's brutally honest, you know. So he has to make this team be ready. Excuse me.
I said that's coaches speak, in my opinion. I honestly believe that Brad Stevens thinks he has enough to compete with the Lakers. I think that's more coaches speak than anything.
Right. Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. That's what he's using, like, all the times that they either ran into Toronto or ran into the Cavs while they had Kyrie and LeBron. Like, there's no more excuses. Like, right now, it's like you have to go out there and coach. And you got to stop these guys and make the best assessment. Just like you said, if he went rogue, I get what you're saying. This is the play that would have been set up. But at that point in time, hit the open man. That's what my father taught me as a coach from since I was 5. So it's like, if he's not hitting the open man, and he from out here playing ball, like, you know this. This each one teach one type of basketball. I don't know. This is more funny about the Brad Stevens situation, and I get it because Kemba is an all-star player, and Kemba has that mafia trying to hit that shot. It didn't fall. I know he's feeling more the pressure of when do I get my game together, especially while he's just now getting back to the roster. These guys have been playing, like in the season form of where they are at this point in time. Kemba just got back there. That's why I'm like, it's awkward, especially at the point in time of taking a shot while other players in the league have taken that type of shot, while the quality player on the floor has a better percentage. And then they look at the other individual taking that shot, like, why is he taking a shot, i.e. Russell Westbrook, while that was happening with KD and Harden and then while they all were together. So that's where that goes. I have a couple questions about certain teams in the NBA, and I'm glad we are often started into an NBA situation. This is a big one. I want to see how you guys feel about this. The Phoenix Suns beat the Dallas Mavericks, okay? This is the interesting part about the Dallas Mavericks. I am concerned. They are 8-12. They are out of the top 10. Forget the top 8 that usually initially makes the playoffs, because now they have a play-in for making the playoffs for the bottom 3 seeds. So what is it, 7-10 this year, right? So it's a play-in game that these guys are going to be playing. The Mavericks are below that. They are in the Western Conference. They are not in the East to make a run. I feel like they can. I think it'll happen possibly, but it's difficult. They're in the West, and I love the picture. I've seen a meme like this like midway through last year where they say the Eastern Conference, and you see Dorothy running up, or she, you know, skipping up the yellow brick road and doing what she wanted to do. And they said the Western Conference, and it's Thanos in the middle of the Infinity War, and everybody going to war. And that's what the West is like. So it's like, I don't see how it gets easier. The only team out West that makes it easier for Dallas is the Minnesota Timberwolves. You got everybody that you play on any given night that could knock you out, like anybody, even the Pelicans, and they're struggling fighting for wins. They're a team that you got to worry about between Ingram and Zion. Now that they got Steven Adams, I'm just waiting to see what J.J. could form into, because they're talking about getting rid of J.J. and Lonzo, but they still have pieces that can beat you. So I want to see how you guys feel about the Mavericks on a losing streak while Porzingis is back, and Luka's still putting up his numbers, but I think they're a piece or two away. I'll pass this one around. Norm, your thoughts on the situation with the Dallas Mavericks losing their third game in a row up against the Suns, and this was in Dallas.
Yeah, I didn't have much take on Dallas. I'll be honest with you. Until the Chiefs close out the Super Bowl, I haven't paid much attention to basketball. I just keep my eye on the Lakers, make sure there's no major injuries. So I don't have a lot of input there. But I do like the Dallas' young stars, and I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Okay, Eric, your thoughts on the game and the Mavericks' state as of now in the Western Conference is not looking good. They're 8-12 out of at least the top 10. Because we're normally used to seeing 1-8 being a push for a playoff perspective, but now like 9 and 10 are being considered for the play-in game, in which in front of the Mavericks, here it is: the Kings, the Thunder, the Rockets, the Spurs. At least from 9, 10, 11, 12, they are below all of these teams. Your thoughts on the Mavericks and where they are now?
Yeah, they're definitely underperforming. You know, Porzingis, he was out again last night. So it's going to boil down to if he can actually stay healthy and stay on the floor. You know what I mean? So him not being able to play every game, you the more games you play, the more rhythm you're going to have, the more chemistry you're going to have. And him just not being out there, you know, they're relying on Willie Cauley-Stein, and he's definitely not the guy. I mean, he's definitely a quality backup, but he's not someone that can fill Porzingis' shoes. So Luka Doncic is out there by himself right now, in a sense, and, you know, he needs help. And he went up against a really good Suns team. You know, Chris Paul's going off. They've been a bright surprise this year, the Suns. You know, they got DeAndre Ayton, who's elevated his game. Jae Crowder's playing great, and, of course, Devin Booker. So, and just like you just touched on, Ty, the West is loaded. So you're going to have to be performing at a top level night in and night out. And it's been a disappointment for Dallas thus far. But, you know, them not having Porzingis last night, if he was in, that could have definitely been the difference maker. But he needs to stay healthy, you know, otherwise they're not going to make it this year into the playoffs. So
I said this on a different network. Before I throw it to Sirius, see how he feels about it. How long of a leash do they have with Porzingis? Like he's the young talent, a.k.a., quote-unquote, the unicorn, and he's not looking like a unicorn. He's 7'3". He can block shots when he's at the rim, but he's not been what he's expected. And like, you see points and times in the midst of a game where Porzingis will have the ball and take a crazy shot or do something weird. And it's like Luka will give him that face like Kobe did Kareem Abdul-Jabbar when he thought, you know, Kareem was working with Bynum well. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, what is this on the floor? And it's like he's looking at Porzingis like, what is this guy? So it's like you see that happening on the floor. Believe me, I know what stank faces like look like, especially in the midst of a game. How long of a leash does Porzingis have before I give it to Sirius?
I think time is running out. You're absolutely correct because this guy's supposed to be a franchise cornerstone, you know. We all see that he can play, but he has to do it on a consistent basis and stay healthy. So I think after this year, the Dallas Mavericks are going to have to look elsewhere, you know, in the draft or trying to acquire another big piece for Luka Doncic to play with. So the unicorn hasn't panned out yet. So I'm thinking after this year they'll have their verdict out on that, or I at least would, you know, because he's already been there for 3 years and he's not on the court half the time. So, you know, missed the whole playoffs last year with him. Dallas had a really good team last year. They you know, gave it them all. They're all against the Clippers and, you know, could have won that series, but they were just missing that other piece. So I think – after this year, you got to start looking elsewhere if you're the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay, Sears, your thoughts on the Dallas Mavericks right now? This is brutal for me to say this in front of you, too. They're the worst team in Texas. they are the worst team in Texas right now. Your thoughts on where they go and how long of a lead does Porzingis have?
You know, the crazy thing about this game was, gentlemen, and, I mean, I haven't heard anybody here mention it, but the Dallas Mavericks had a 15-point lead with 6 minutes left to go in the third quarter, and they blew it. You know, I mean, it's weird watching this team, you know, crumble like this. You know, I mean, you got a guy who is in the MVP discussion, you know, for a couple of years now on Luka, and he made some comments about the 16-point loss that they suffered at the hands of the Utah Jazz prior to this game. And I was actually, you know, kind of peeking at this game a little bit, you know, as I was dealing with some moving stuff and things that I got to deal with here at the house. But wow. I mean, we all understood that the acquisition of Chris Paul to the Suns would, you know, prove to be a tire-turning situation when you know, get this guy of that caliber and, you know, Devin Booker and you know, Ayton, who is coming off an incredible season. But the crazy thing about it is, according to what I'm looking at right now, you know, Devin Booker didn't even play. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Devin Booker, he didn't play due to a left hamstring. So, I mean, if you run down the stat line, you know, Chris Paul had 29. He had 18 of that in the third and fourth quarter. DeAndre Ayton had 18. Bridges, you know, a nice star that's kind of emerging there. I have 14. We all understand what we're getting from Jay Crowder. I mean, his skill set and what he's been able to do since, you know, being in the league, you know, needs no endorsement from me or anybody else here. You know, so what's going on with Dallas? You know what I'm saying? Let's flip this on its ear. What's really going on with Dallas? I mean, is the problem really Porzingis? Is that the real problem? Because here's the thing, like, you're getting, you know, 19 to 22 a game from Tim Hardaway. You know, Willie Cauley-Stein is kind of up and down. Obviously, Luka is going to be Luka. But, you know, is the issue really not having a second big or a second star to run side Luka? You know what I'm saying? Because if the truth be told, this team is losing it, ironically, on defense. They can't play defense at all. You know what I'm saying? You know, this is a jump-shooting team, and the issue with jump-shooting teams, again, take it from a Houston Rockets fan. The issue with jump-shooting teams is if you're not making your jump, if you go through a period of 5 to 6 minutes when you're missing, you let teams back in the game, and you don't have the horses on the defensive side of the ball to strap up anybody. You know what I'm saying? So, again, shout out to the Suns for getting that win. You know, the Western Conference is loaded, like my man Thomas alluded to. It's going to be crazy to see how it all pans out, but, you know, they're sitting there at 8-12 now. They're not completely out of it. I don't think anybody in the Western Conference besides the Timberwolves are completely out of it. I think, you know, six games separates the first and kind of like the 10th squad. So we'll see what happens, man. But it's crazy watching Dallas unfold like this. Again, as a Rockets fan, I kind of like it.
Right. And we finally agree. Sports City, he went to church, so we do agree. Here go the crazy part. So you look at it like this. They don't play defense. The defensive piece that they need in the paint would be Porzingis, because Porzingis can contest shots. Because you remember when he was with the Knicks, he was in the middle of the paint. A lot of people didn't come down there. So he's not a unicorn, people. He's a pony until he shows me that he's a unicorn. I get it. He's 7'3". He can shoot jump shots. He could jump to be a 7-footer. But he's not out there. And this is what I was saying. And people could come after me all they want. I think Porzingis is in Dallas for another 2 to 3 years. That's it. If he can't get it together, they can't win a first-round matchup in the playoffs, get to the second round with Porzingis and Luka. They cannot. Porzingis there, while his value is still okay. Like, I think his value to a team is still okay for him to be moving and get interesting pieces for him. And I think that they were kind of looking at Luka and Porzingis to kind of be the Nash and Nowitzki era while these guys were together. And I feel like, you know, that's the same thing they're trying to make work or happen. And I agree with you, Sirius. You're right. I don't think it falls too much on, like, Luka or Porzingis would. I feel like Porzingis would help a ton if he was on the floor consistently. I think that I do put a lot of my focus to the guy that dodges a lot of bullets, the same way I was looking at Brad Stevens and Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle is surviving that job since he won his doggone NBA championship in 2011. 10 years later, Dallas does not look like that, and I get it. Dirk just retired. It's fresh. It's what, like a 4 or 5 year situation since Dirk retired. But it's like Dallas is looking like Dallas. Like outside of that 2011 run, we haven't seen them get back to the promised land and watching Carlisle more or less defer at the coaching position. We do have people in queue. I have calling out of the 917 area code. Welcome to the brunch. How you feeling? What's your name? What's on your mind this morning?
What's up, guys? This is David in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm just calling to mention or to say something about Porzingis because you brought it up. Overrated. Yo, this guy, man. This guy is – you said it, too. You beat me to a tie. He's a pony, not a unicorn. This guy is not that impressive. We, finally being the Knicks, finally got – something from that trade that is beautiful. We got Emmanuel Quickley from our pick, our first-round pick that we got from trading him years ago. And it's like, oh, man, that is just a thing of beauty because IQ is the truth now for us Knicks fans. And but, yeah, to comment on the Mavericks, I mean, you got one of the best players in the league saying, what, after the game last night or 2 games ago, I can't remember, said, this team looks like they don't even want to win. He's like, I can't tell if they want to win or lose or something, or said something like that. I don't know the quote exactly, but it's like, dude, you got this incredible guy leading your team, and you got no fire in the tank. Like the Mavericks are terrible right now. I mean, come on, dude, wake up behind your dude. Or maybe you guys are touched on it. Maybe it is Luka. Maybe Luka's not rallying the troops properly. I don't know, but whatever it is, it's not good.
First off, you better get your team straight because you got stole Quickley from the Oklahoma City Thunder. We gave you him. We drafted him, and we gave him to the Knicks. So I'm mad about that because he's out here balling. Secondly, looking at where the Mavericks are right now, granted, I like the way the series said it because it's basically it's 7.5 games between where Dallas is and the Pelicans are compared to first place where the Jazz are. And I can't believe Utah's in first place, but these guys are on an 11-game winning streak. But I'm saving that for the cafe. I got it. Utah, that's a whole nother discussion right now because they're cooking without Donovan, the Greenwich, Connecticut kid. But just let me get back to it. So the Mavericks are – basically, they played 2 more games than the Pelicans, and they're sitting basically in the same position right now, where, to be honest, I feel the Pelicans got more of a shot to make this comeback with what they have on their team, especially if Van Gundy can get it together with the cards that he's dealt, because he has pieces there. There's no excuse for him. I don't want to hear it. You got a big all the way up to your point position. You got to figure this out. Dallas' situation, I don't feel like when Porzingis returns, these guys just start storming the Western Conference. Their last 10 games, they are 2-8. They are 2-8. And especially in the Western Conference, they are 4-7 in the Western Conference. They are not doing anything in the West. So they have, what is it, 4-5? They're 4-5 outside of the conference. They're doing better against the Eastern Conference. So they better hope that the rest of the schedule is against the East, which is going to be 50-50 at the end of the day. I don't feel like they storm back. The way that I'm looking at them right now, to me, they are in the realm where they are. They are Sacramento Kings or New Orleans Pelicans. Like, that's where they're at. That's the type of ball that they're playing. Carlisle has to get this figured out. I think more or less since he won the championship, I feel he's Cuban is loyal to him. If I'm saying that correctly. Yeah, Cuban is loyal to Carlisle because he brought him the championship. I don't think he wants to part from him because, I guess, respectively, he respects Carlisle at the end of the day. But it's like Carlisle figures out a better scheme, or that's like a 1 to 2 year window. I don't know how long he's going to sit on him. And then how long do they sit on the youth of Porzingis being along Luka if they don't bring pieces there? And the worst thing that they could have ever done, this is the worst thing the Mavericks could have ever done, was last year in sending Steph to Philly. You sent your one of your better shooters to Philadelphia. Like, how did that help you? I don't get how that helps you. Like, you get a game with Tim Hardaway Jr. can give you 36, and then he'll have 9. It's like, wait, what? Like, where is the consistency on this team? You got rid of these pieces to do what? Trey Burke, you sit him on the bench, he'll give you 6 points and then go on for like 27. I need to see consistency. Something has to give. You have the pieces on the floor and they're not putting them together. That's the way I feel about Dallas and especially what's going on with Carlisle. But this is how far this has been strung along for the past 10 seasons. Okay, so I mean, if you guys have anything else, NBA, I do see a couple, and Sirius Rockets pulled it off against the Pelicans, excuse me. The Rockets, like I said, they're playing better ball. Who would have thought the Rockets would be playing better ball than Dallas, and they're moving harder. Like, they're 500. Like you, and the Spurs are playing good ball, even though they lost. They're above 500. They lost to the Grizzlies, too. I do want to get away from it because now that I've got a decent amount of people in here, and, oh, yeah, Dame hit a buzzer beater. If you didn't see the shot, YouTube it because it was incredible. That
yo,
shot
that was crazy.
I got you. I'm cooking, bro. I'm cooking, Heidi. I got you. I'm cooking. I mean, I don't even know if it's that much to talk about with Dame hitting that shot because that's what Dame do. Dame time when he pointed at the wrist. But it's like Chicago did everything that they needed to do, stay up front. Lauri Markkanen, I wanted him when he came out of school, but Thunder couldn't get him. But he had a good game, scoring 31. And knowing LaVine has stepped up his presence on the floor, and I think he's their guy, and Kobe White as well, being a guard out of North Carolina. They got a good amount of pieces, but I feel bad for you, Billy Donovan. You left my team. You left us and went to Chicago, and it got worse out there, and Dame continued the flow of sinking that shot up against you guys. Okay, so the kitchen is quite full here, and shout out to my co-host throughout the week and the guy that makes a lot of this stuff possible. I got the villain in the building, Barry. Welcome to the Brunch House Grilling this morning.
I'm villain. I just wanted to get a piece of that KP talk because I heard DH in the bill. What up, DH? What up, Sirius? What up, Eric? What up, everybody?
Good morning.
Good morning.
What up, my dude?
Because
I was about to shout you out when I was talking about KP. I felt like I was about to say, I hope the villain hears this and gets in here, man. But here you say.
Exactly. My spider senses were tingling, so I had to come in and came in at the right time because I heard DA say overrated. And I was like, wow, that's kind of villainous. But then I was like, hell yeah, man, he's overrated. Who cares about KP? I mean, listen, the villain is going to tell you he can't stay healthy. And listen, they're doing the right thing by slowly integrating him, you know, into the lineup. And if there's like a back-to-back or a 3-4 set for them, like he's sitting out certain games like that. We talked about like a week ago, like he had sat out one game. But I agree with you guys. Like if you don't really think he's going to be the Robin on this team, I don't see that happening. We said it before. I think, you know, the Mavericks need to go out and make a move for somebody to bring in a true Robin. Like we said, there's somebody in Washington that might be on the move. That might be the best pick. Maybe swap them straight up, KP for Beal. Who knows? But I just don't see how you can have KP, but not him and not being reliable. He wasn't there in the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he had that injury, and then it was a wrap. And Giannis had to put the team on his back. But if there was ever any debate last year who was the true Batman on that team, Luka Doncic basically shut it down. And DH is right. I mean, time's going to tell on that Knicks-Mavericks trade who won and who lost. But right now, the Knicks, they got quickly in the draft with one of the picks. The Mavericks got a superstar they can't keep on the court. Hey, it's looking so far so good.
Listen, you two are not going to start squeezing Knicks talk in here. I know that that's going to stop, like, right now. You better go ahead, both of y'all.
I'd rather talk about the Knicks and the OKC Thunder.
I know you don't. No, you don't. At least we got somebody that's potentially going to the All-Star game. The Knicks don't have anybody. Look, at the end of the day.
Excuse me. Did you sneeze? Did you sneeze? I know I heard something. something crazy going out your mouth and saying the Knicks don't have an all-star, when you know that Julius Randle is having an all-star caliber year and R.J. Barrett's having a pretty nice second year. So, excuse me, did you sneeze? Did something come out? I mean, did you need a tissue? I mean, what's wrong?
The Knicks you are relevant. Make me sneeze. I'll sneeze on this mute button if you keep it going. So you better go ahead.
Ain't nobody wanting no mute button.
You will be the prisoner to this mute button. You always get it. So listen. The matter of I'm getting into right now. You know, this is Sports City. I'm telling you, I can't never talk. I be trying to cook. I'm trying to host. This is what I go through with every last one of these dudes. Either they calling out of Brooklyn, they calling out of upstate Connecticut, they calling out of the DMV. I got to deal with all of these personalities. Y'all don't know what I go through. I'm telling you, I got a dartboard and a punching bag for all of these dudes. So let me, like Sports City, I told you at the top of the show, right? And I posted this as well, and I tell a lot of people, especially, you know, at the start of doing this show, like I try to remain out of my bias and try not to. But this one right here, Sports City, I have to get personal. This topic that I'm going into, that like I got to put everything on the line here. And this is the blockbuster trade that just went down yesterday. And I'm gonna go first. I don't even want to like wait for everybody because I'll be too impatient because it's me like telling you that it's personal. First and foremost, let me do this the right way. Matthew Stafford, I'm happy with the send off. You know what I'm saying? Like you did all that you can do in the 12 seasons that you were here, 12 or 13 seasons that you were here, and the camaraderie that you had with Calvin and all of the Stafford to Johnson connections. I love and. You know, a lot of people are enamored with your big arm, so on and so forth. But I always wanted to see something start anew. Like, I thought that, you know, the Lions could get somebody in, have them learn underneath him. He never gave anybody grounds to, like, learn underneath him. They just had backup sit there and wait for him to get injured and try to throw these guys out on the stage, and they're cold. Like, you went and gave Chase Daniels a whole bunch of money to be a backup, and he's never really done anything in the league to be a backup, and then behind him is David Blau, and even if those two get hurt, do you really feel successful with David Blau? And it's like now we're in a situation with Goff coming, which he has postseason experience, but he's been injured the past couple of seasons, and he got into a Super Bowl and did that without Todd Gurley in that run that they had. So it's like he has the postseason experience, but it's like what kind of Goff are we expecting? And then I look at this draft upcoming. Because it's like I was really looking forward to them getting rid of Stafford. I knew it was imminent that he was gone. But picking up me personally, the guy that I wanted was Zach Wilson, the guy out of BYU. If you've not seen him play, this guy's electric. He has the big arm that you're waiting for Stafford to throw every big pass. His completion percentage is 81%. He throws everything on a dime. A lot of his receivers are in stride catching his passes. This is something that you want him to – he's probably going to take his lumps off the gate coming into the league, but I guess once he gets acclimated and he could pick up yards on his feet, like he's a scrambler too. So, like, I feel like – and he's more of a pocket passer than a scrambler. So, I feel like that transition would have been okay. But now you got Goff that just walled the lines off from picking up a quarterback first round or going with the person that a lot of people think that the mock draft will go down. If he falls to 7, they still could end up getting Devontae Smith or Waddle, whichever receiver I see could, you know, fit the situation for the Detroit Lions. But, like, I do want to give Stafford his flowers. I'm not going to totally, you know, pick on him, I guess, for show purposes. Everybody here that knows me knows that I pick on Stafford bigger than what I'm doing here, but I got to be fair while I'm sitting here in the kitchen. But, like, it's like between him or Goff, I'd rather go with Goff because Goff had to figure out a way while doing it without his biggest star on the field while Todd Gurley sat out that remainder of that Super Bowl run that they had. And I get it. A lot of people were like, oh, it's different because the Rams had a defense. Yeah, and I get it. They got Aaron Donald, the best defensive player in football. That's how I feel right now. If you find a better defensive player than Aaron Donald, you got me. But it's like they had the best defensive player, but he still got to put points on the board. And I know that he likes to sell the play action to get the ball downfield, but it's like, well, it has to work somehow because if you look at a Lions game, Stafford says hike, and he sits back there with the ball for like 5 seconds, and knowing his line is weak, they're going to get to him. And he's picking up sacks and throws the ball in harm's way, things of that nature. So it's like I'd rather see them start anew. Everything is new. And I was picking on, you know, the organization because they went after Dan Campbell and his entry speech. It was like, yo, we're biting kneecaps and chunks out of people and all the other type of stuff. Like, we just got gory, graphic, and all other type of stuff. But then once the dust of that cleared, then Kim was already going around the league and getting all type of people. And I'm like, yo, he just started fresh and clean house. Like, he cleaned house from all the offensive coordinators and specialty coaches and all the defensive coordinators and specialty coaches on the defensive side of the ball, and he started fresh. So it's like, okay, now I see what's up. Getting Aaron Glenn and all of these guys, I'm like, okay, so I'm really ready for the rebuild. And then the Lions can suffer another year, okay, but if they come out the gate and they go 7-9, 8-8, like I feel good. Go 9-7, 10-6. I'm talking jump. You go 11-5. I'm on top of the world. So I'm ready. I don't know. I really wanted Zach Wilson, but this is a situation, like, I don't know how I feel about the Goff situation. You know, like, I like Goff. I like Goff coming out of Cal, and for him to be younger than Stafford and having postseason experience and having the guts to go up against and win up against Rodgers or win up against Wilson, he's gone up against these teams and gotten these wins. Stafford up against teams with winning records, he's like 15-97. Like, it's like, dog, I don't like that number. Like he can go perfect 3 years in a row and still can't make that up. He still can't make that up. So I feel it's all a new, fresh start, and I feel good about the move. I don't want to totally dish your Stafford, but I wanted you to go years ago. You could ask Barry. You could ask anybody that's come in this doggone kitchen. I've been ready to see that 9 go. Now, I know a lot of people that I deal with out in Michigan, they're like, you know, these guys are Stafford life, but they don't want to hear it. Ty, don't say that. We got to keep Stafford. We got to keep him until the wheels fall off. Oh, no, we don't. No, we don't. I'm glad that this happened. So, like, Stafford, I wish you well. I'm not going to totally be the bad guy. You know what I'm saying? I wish you well out there. You've done a lot for the community of Michigan and for the organization for as long as you've been there. And, you know, there's epic games and epic fourth quarter comebacks and the Calvin 329-yard passing, the receiving yard game. You have more passing yards than that. But it's been a ton of memories with him. And I can't totally get mad at him, but it's been more bad times than me screaming at the screen like, 9, get rid of the ball, instead of, oh, he threw a bomb touchdown. So I'm going to throw this one around the kitchen, see how everybody feels about how this thing went down with Matthew Stafford and him being traded to the Los Angeles Rams. I will start with you first. I'll start with the quarterback first. How about that, Dave? I'll start with you first.
Oh, yeah. I think it was a win-win trade, actually. It was one of those that was destined to happen. And I think that the Rams, we knew – what's that guy's name? The guy that they just brought in at the end, Woodford or something? That Walford, they brought in. And so there was already going to be – a quarterback, you know, battle there with Goff, even though he was, you know, he really was playing okay, just kind of came out because of injury. And then, but the fact that they just made the change by bringing in because they already got that tough defense, they bring in this proven tough quarterback. Because one thing I always say about Stafford is, a dude is tough, man. The poor guy has been smacked by injury in his career, but he's been tough. You've seen him come out and like a football player and come out injured and win football games. And it's like, that's what you want to see. Like that, like the opposite Jay Cutler, you know what I mean? The guy that comes out there with a heart and wants to play, and his body sometimes gives out on him, but his heart is never going to give out. So it's a win for a team that already has a guy like Aaron Donald on the other side. And I think it's a win for the Lions because they get the picks, they get a pretty good quarterback to take over the helm, and they get a good future, I think.
Yeah, and I like the fact that the Lions were able to go into Los Angeles and like stick them up for these picks. And this is something that, you know, I was talking with the villain last night and people outside of, you know, the conversation we had, for the Lions to be able to send Stafford off and get not only Goff back, but 3 different picks. So we get a pick this year and 2 different first rounders. It's like, yeah, they went up there with the gun. And I know I can say this to Dave Heidegger. I know this is one of our favorite, well, at least mine, but he know I like this. Like the movie Heat, it goes stick up the bank and have the AK shootout in the middle of LA. Like, for real, we leaving LA with the bags. You hear me? Like, we leaving here with the bags. You know, I want to be Val Kilmer. Like, let me be Val Kilmer shooting up LA. I'm Dead serious. If y'all didn't see the movie Heat, please go see it. I know that's a classic that I can share with this guy. Barry, I don't know if you are able to talk about the situation with the Stafford trade. How do you feel it went, at least on L.A. side or Detroit side, and your thoughts on Stafford in a whole?
No, I mean, we talked about it last night, and, I felt like Detroit got the better end of the stick. I think it works for both sides. I think from L.A.'s perspective, like Dave said, I can't echo it enough, but they got a tough quarterback at 32, 33 years old that can play for them for another 7 to 10 years, and lead that offense where they're pretty ready-made. And Dave alluded to it. They had Wolford and they had Goff. And it looked like, we talked about it too, TP. Like, it looked like McVay and Goff were just not on the same page. They weren't doing along. After McVay kind of was the guy that said, you got to pay Goff, pay him the money. Now it's to the point where I think McVay was like, I need another quarterback. There was question marks if Goff was going to start those playoff games because Wolford came in and was running the offense. So, you could see that relationship kind of strained and it kind of ran its course. So the Rams got a good quarterback that can run their offense. They already got Cooper Kupp. They got, Woods. They got Akers in the running game. I think they're ready to really contend with a really good defense that's inconsistent but can play. Detroit, on the other hand, you're right. They got multiple picks. They basically – they got a. I don't know if it's like a stopgap quarterback. I mean, Goff might be the guy. You never know. But if he's not, you have the flexibility to draft a quarterback this year or next year or the year after that. And, the Rams had to give those picks to get rid of Goff's contract. With 4 years on his deal, $104 million left, they had to do something to make the Lions want to take that contract on. Yeah, to throw in the picks. And the Lions got the picks. They got the quarterback that can play right now. And then they can kind of rebuild and retool for the future. I think, honestly, they got Hockenson, the tight end. They got good receivers. You're right. They got to re-sign Marvin Jones. But in all in all, I think both sides came out pretty good on this deal. I think the Rams came out a little better. From certain perspectives, and I think the Lions came out better in the fact that they have a future now and can turn the page on Stafford and not have to blow it all up.
Quickly, before I throw this one to Sirius, who would you rather have in the draft? Would you if they both were available at 7? Zach Wilson or Devontae?
We kind of went back and forth on this too. I think the better fit with Goff is the receiver with the receiver. But if you're drafting for the future, you got to take the kid for BYU. You got to take Wilson. So if you don't think that Goff is the guy, if you think Goff's the guy, you go get him receiver help, or better yet, you go get that freak of alignment for Oregon. I don't think he'll fall to 7, but if you think Goff is the guy, you build around him. If you don't think so, go get Wilson.
See, and what bothers me about Goff is his injury pass. You know what I'm saying? It's like he has an injury pass, but he's gotten postseason experience. So it's like I'm indecisive about it. That's why I'm like I'm ready to go with a guy like Zach Wilson that is winning while he's out there, and in a questionable conference. I can't really say like he's playing in the middle of the ACC or the SEC or something like that. But for the receiver that he has between him and Dax Milne, and Milne is like a 6'6" receiver that could get a little separation, but he has good speed and he's hitting these guys on the money. Like, and it's like if he's making those type of passes, just picture with better receivers. So I'm caught because like we needed Devontae Smith and the speed that he brings out there on the field, but a quarterback in Zach Wilson, or I know a lot of people are high on Trey Lance as well. If Trey Lance could go there, me and you were also talking about Mac Jones, the guy out of Alabama, but I'm not high on a lot of Alabama quarterbacks because they do good in college, but when they come to the league, it's like they fall off a cliff. So, like, I'm concerned about that.
And one quick thing before Sirius Brent comes in, brother, and I know Sirius, you say the same thing. It's like – you see with this trade how important it is to get the right quarterback. I mean, the Rams drafted Goff number one overall, gave him a lot of money, and now he's on the move. You know, it's you'll pay for the quarterback, and you'll do heaven and earth to get the right quarterback to run your system. So, you know, if it's Mac Jones or Wilson, whoever, you got to make that move. You have to say, if I got to pay him 100 something million, I got to pay him. If I got to trade him and picks to get the right quarterback, like they might do with Watson, that's what you got to do. Because past the Jets, they still haven't gotten the right quarterback. It's hard to get a quarterback in this league.
Okay, so, Sears, your thoughts on the situation with Goff and Stafford being traded, but the Lions got more out of the deal.
Yeah. You know, I come on this network a lot, and, you know, whether I do it here publicly or privately through text message, and I literally enjoy just dragging the Detroit Lions, primarily because that's Thomas's team, and I get great pleasure out of making him feel stupid. But at the end of the day, I have to tip my cap to both teams because, you know, at the end of the day, I think the Lions really got a guy who needed a change of scenery. I think, you know, Jared Goff, albeit he has been arguably one of the worst quarterbacks, you know, over the course of the past couple of years. Understanding Sean McVay's offense and understanding Sean McVay's, you know, inability to commit to a running game consistently it's really hurt Jared Goff. Keep in mind, when they paid Jared Goff that amount of money, he was, you know, playing in the Super Bowl. He was a Pro Bowler. They had a legitimate running game in Todd Gurley, and he was able to work off the play action and this and everything. You know, the Rams had musical chairs for running backs, you know, the past couple years. They really could not settle on a guy, and when they got something going, Sean McVay tend to get cued. And I don't think Jared Goff is a gunslinger. I don't think he's the type of guy who will succeed and dropping the ball back, you know, throwing the ball, you know, 35, you know, plus times a game. I think Matthew Stafford is that guy. I think Matthew Stafford has shown, you know, with the talent that he has had in Detroit, and, you know, albeit he has some durability issues, but, you know, with the talent he had there in Detroit, that he doesn't mind throwing the ball, you know, 30 plus times a game. You know, I think, you know, we all knew this breakup was coming. We all knew that the Detroit Lions wanted to move in a different direction. I still believe Thomas, and again, we'll talk about this as the draft approaches. I still think, you know, you guys will probably look at selecting a quarterback in the later round, somebody who can come in and kind of be groomed by Jared Goff. I mean, he's played at the highest of levels. And so he does have some type of information that, you know, can be passed down to the future quarterback. But I honestly believe that Jared Goff is on his last leg. You know, you really got to come into Detroit and prove that, you know, the change of scenery was good. You got to come to Detroit and prove that you can kind of acclimate yourself to the city and to the fan base like a Matthew Stafford did. You don't have to be Matthew Stafford, be Jared Goff, but kind of acclimate yourself. You do have some couple pieces there. You know, we got to figure out what's going on with Kenny Galladay and his health, who do miss all of last season. They got DeAndre Swift, a running back who can, you know, pretty much is one of my favorite guys that came out of last year's draft. So I mean, you have some legitimate pieces to play with. You got some legitimate pieces to work with. Now what are you going to do with those? On the flip side, I think Matthew Stafford goes up to L.A. and gets with Sean McVay and, you know, those, you know, zone read, you know, runs and those jet sweeps and the screen passes and, you know, Cooper Kupp going down the middle of the field and Robert Woods. And, you know, I mean, I think it's a win-win for both teams, but I do think if I'm going to tip the scale in a different, you know, one side or the other, I think Detroit actually won the deal because of the picks that they were able to get from the L.A. Rams to kind of offset what's going on. If Jared Goff turns out to be a dud, then you can really turn to a quarterback who you're drafting this year, or a quarterback be able to draft in, you know, 2 years after, you know, LA gave you a first-round draft pick. So it's a win for Detroit, but not by a large margin.
Yeah, it's so hard for him to, like, try and give me some gratitude, sports lady, I'll tell you.
It really is. I know, and
that's him fresh out of church, y'all. This is the crazy part. But I feel good that because I hope, like, we got, like, I want him to be like El Chapo. Like I want our GM to like be the best dealer that is and just go to Jacksonville and be like, yo, I got these picks, dog, and we can just get Trevor Lawrence out of this. That's it. We can steal Trevor, and I'm all set. Let him learn a little bit from God. Let them two get together. God, peace. See you later. Trevor, let's do our doggone thing. That's how I feel. I wish, like in the personal view, but analytically, I know that they finna be like, nah. We're not going to do that. But that's what I would want. But, Eric, so since you are the NFC West guy, your thoughts on this situation, I know that you've seen, you know, teams like your Niners tee off on Stafford. Do you think he could come in there and make a difference and, I guess, push them to the top of the NFC West where they have to deal with you guys twice, deal with Seattle twice, deal with an up-and-coming Arizona team twice with D-Hop and Kyler Murray? Or do you think he'll have to find his way and take his lumps before he can get them to the promised land?
Yeah, it's going to take a while, Ty. You know, the Rams lost to the Niners twice last year, so that made my year. Anytime we beat the Rams, you know, it's great for me. So I started out a Rams fan in 95, or my whole life as a youngster, and when they left L.A. at 95, I was heartbroken and went to the Niners. So, you know, the Rams are one of my – they're the enemy, man. You know what I mean? So it's – anytime they lose, it's good. But on the flip side, as a sports analysis, you know, it was good for Goff to get out of L.A. I'm not sold on McVay, folks. I think he isn't that good of a quarter or a coach. You know, he's got that great defense. They went to the Super Bowl, and Todd Gurley was playing lights out that year. You don't even play him in the second half when you have a chance to beat New England. So – you know, his coaching style has always been questionable with me. So Stafford coming in, yeah, it's good. I think other than Cup, they don't really have that lights out wide receiver. So I think they're going to need to get better at that position for Stafford to succeed. So it's going to be interesting to see what McVay actually does with a quarterback like Stafford, because I think he's a really good football player. Just like everybody alluded to, he's tough. He's going to get in there and play. So I'm eager to see what he does there. But I'm more happy for the Detroit Lions. I think they definitely won on this. They got rid of an older quarterback, got first-round picks out of the deal. They're set up for years. And they get Goff, who's proven, and he gets a change of scenery. And, you know, if Kenny Golladay can stay healthy, they got Marvin Jones if they bring him back, Mohamed Sanu. They got these quality receivers that he can really do damage with. You know, you got a three-headed monster. So, and you also throw in Hockenson, who's an up-and-coming tight end. I like it. They got DeAndre Swift. They have a really good offense right now on paper. So I'm excited to see what Dan Campbell can do. And the future looks bright in Detroit, folks. Just like everybody mentioned, too, it's a win-win. If Goff doesn't pan out, you got these draft picks that you can work with. So, and they could even get a quarterback in this year's draft. Who knows? So it's looking really good if you're a Detroit Lions fan. You know, it needed to change. You know, it was getting stagnant over there with Stafford. So, you know, like Ty said, Jared Goff has the playoff experience. He's been to the big game, and now he's set up with this offense that can do some damage. So I'm excited to see how this pans out, but Detroit definitely wins on this trade just for the simple fact they get rid of an older quarterback and they get all these draft picks in play, so, and a quality quarterback. So that's my take.
Yeah, you can cook for me any day. That's what I'm talking about. I need quality cooking like that. That's what I'm talking about, man. You don't even know how many of these sloppy joes that I deal with Sirius and them, I'm telling you. But it's crazy that they have these pieces. I'm really worried about Marvin Jones because Marvin Jones had an impact season. But looking at the other side of the spectrum, Like, I think Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods complement him well, but I think they work good in that play action. Every time it was play action, they get a step on a corner because a lot of the defenders bite up just because of the reaction of seeing a running back get the ball, and they get that. So it's like if Stafford can work that play action type of game, then it works. But you just made this even more interesting with calling out McVay. This is something that me and Barry talked about last night and a few other people too. On him getting a leg up for, I guess, the quick start that he had being one of the young coaches. But now it's like it's all being put out there. Now you don't see too much out of him, even though they made the playoffs this season, but they fell short. It's like how much of this do they put in front of McVay, or is he going to be like one of the coaches that we were talking during the basketball segment? Does he get put behind the curtain and he talk about the players that are out there on the stage instead of worrying about or pulling the strings on the people that are, you know, basically calling the plays upstairs. So I this is a very interesting situation if we're looking at it, you know, at least McVay on that spectrum. But I think that Stafford at least has pieces with Higbee at the tight end position. I respect Higbee. He's a good quality tight end. Cooper Kupp is he's not a secret anymore. This guy has good electric speed, and Woods wins a lot of his matchups on the outside too. So this is big for Stafford to go to L.A. that has an already made offered for him, and Cam Akers is a quality running back that I know a lot about out of Florida State. I've seen all of his years while he was down there in Tallahassee. So, and he did a good job this past season too. So this is what it is for him in the West. But it's Infinity War out West. You got to deal with Russ twice. Yeah, I don't think he's ever beaten Russ. And then also having to deal with a Kyler Murray again, and him and Kyler go at it, and then having to deal with you guys depending on what your defense looks like with Bosa's return. Hopefully that you guys are at full strength and healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
I do have Norm back in the building. Norm, your thoughts on the trade between L.A. and Detroit?
Yeah, it was, I would have to say the Rams getting the better quarterback, it was a big win for them. And, you know, when you look at Detroit and Stafford together, that whole situation, it was time, I guess, for them, so... You know, it's not like it was an ugly divorce. I think they just agreed that, hey, you know, we've been through X amount of coaches, X amount of years, through all this and that, and it's just, you know what, we're going to change scenery. So the interesting part was Detroit taking on that massive contract that Goff has, but I guess they just had to do it to get the deal done. So the two things I'm looking at when it's all said and done is, yeah, I want to see how McVay uses Stafford in the offense. Do they continue to maintain the play-action type of offense? Now you have a better quarterback that can potentially drop back at the end of the game and move the offense and get you a quick score, because Goff couldn't do that. And Goff, I don't think, ever will be able to do that. I don't think he's that kind of quarterback. So the Rams definitely won by getting the better quarterback. How is he utilized there? I mean, on paper, again, it looks pretty. Oh, they could be front runners to, take the NFC. But that's all a pipe dream until we actually see what Sean McVay does with Stafford and how all that gels together. On the Detroit side, I want to see what they do with that contract that they had absorbed with Goff. If you see any kind of rework or an extension or any kind of way to cut the cap number down, that'll tell you what their long-term plans are with Goff. If they kind of leave it as it is, then that would tell me that, hey, they're going to absorb it for the year and they're going to move on from him early on, probably like next year. And so how does Detroit use Goff this year? And I think really they have to really focus on the run, very much how he had success with the Rams, because that is the kind of quarterback Goff is. He's very precise, hits his spots. He's really good at that. But what he's not good at is his decision-making is a little questionable. He's definitely not mobile, can't move when he gets a little pressure, and he's still a young guy learning. So I think you definitely need to, for Detroit, lean heavy on the run, use that rookie Swift that they had. He had a good year, and just try to turn into a tough-nosed football team for next year, and then kind of see where the cards fall with any kind of depth after Goff. So that's what I'm looking for on both sides.
So you think Detroit lost the trade or the deal?
I'm not going to say they lost the deal because they got a lot of draft picks. I'll tell you this. For next season, I think they lost the deal. For, let's say, forecasting, you know, 3-4 years down the road, yeah, they should be the winners because there should be more they're able to bring in, and the Rams are more saying, hey, we're dumping this bad move of a contract. And yes, we're foregoing our future with draft picks, but we're going to get a better quarterback that can help us win now because they know that that defense can only stay together for so long. So on the short term, yes, I think the Rams won as of today. You know, what Detroit does, like I say, I really think if Detroit tries to hang on to Goff and build around him, they're going to lose that altogether because I don't think he's one of those quarterbacks that's going to go all the way. I don't think he'll ever make it back to the big dance.
Yeah, but here goes the crazy part.
This guy's already been to the Super Bowl.
Right, and that's I was going to hit that. Yeah, and knowing that he has postseason experience, but that's one. But two, Detroit don't have to hang on to him. They could get rid of Goff. They could dump him. Like, that can happen before the draft. Like, they can get rid of him. Like they not in bed with him yet. Like, that can happen. So, like, and you saying that he doesn't move, I think he moves more than Stafford ever did, especially how he sells the play action. You see him do a wide boot. He has a whole side of the field to himself so he can scramble or make that throw. Like, I feel like he was more evasive than Stafford ever had been. Stafford would sit in the pocket and take those sacks. So, like, for me seeing that week by week, I beg to differ. I think Goff has more movement than Stafford ever had.
The problem with just dumping Goff is the dead money. I mean, basically you're telling your football team, hey, this is a down year. This is nothing, you know, so we're going to bring in whoever. So, I mean, who would you put at quarterback at that point? I mean, that's another discussion. Hey, dump Goff.
We just talked about the draft. Did you hear the draft talk at all? No? Did that go over you?
Yeah, but I'm sorry. I don't think any rookie out of the draft is going to jump in. I think, again, if you take any rookie, I don't even care if it's Trevor Lawrence, and you put him in to a situation where, hey, we need you to start and win now, that's tough for a kid, and no matter how good he is. So, I mean, are you – it's an interesting decision. Go ahead.
So Ben Roethlisberger didn't go 15-1, like went 15 straight out the bag. Like that happens.
Yeah,
it can happen.
There are scenarios. I'm not buying it. I mean, Burrow sure did look good for a rookie, but didn't equal a lot of wins. You know, Tua looks like garbage. You know, thank goodness they didn't start him week one. So I mean, there's two sides to it. And that's the interesting take. And again, that's why I want to see what they do with Goff. I want to see, like, what are you going to do with that? Are you just going to dump it and say, hey, we're going to take all this dead money for this year and we're just going to roll with whatever we got? Or do they try to work something with him? And that'll be an interesting thing. Because, like I said, I think if they extend Goff or hang on to him, I think it's a very bad move. I think Goff's definitely a starter in the NFL. But, you know, with what Detroit's doing, and I think this is good for Detroit. Detroit is bringing in a fresh wave of everything. You know, they're committed to this new coach the way they want to go about it. You know, hey, let's kind of clean house, you know, and let's make this right. And I think if you sign Goff, even though, you know, stat-wise he may have a good career, I don't think he's ever going to make it back to the Super Bowl.
Fair enough.
I beg to differ.
Right. Go ahead. Talk to him.
Yeah. I beg to differ because Goff has been a quality quarterback. You got to remember, he's only been in the league since 2016 and already made it to the Super Bowl, already has Pro Bowl years. The guy is a good quarterback. I just think he wasn't a good fit with McVay. McVay is a way overrated coach. So getting his chance in Detroit, you're acting like this is just a garbage move and Detroit got screwed by getting Goff. And this Goff could be the future of the Detroit Lions. You're acting like it's a wash. Your kid's only 26 years old, so the future could be really bright. They got backup plans if it doesn't go away, but I think Detroit's set up for a really good year, especially on paper. They got all these good wide receivers. If Golladay can stay healthy, this Detroit Lions team is going to be dangerous they'll be able to compete with Green Bay. So, the verdict is out for sure. You can't just say that this is a garbage move because Jared Goff is a quality quarterback, still young, still learning. He could get into this and just take off. So I think Detroit is set up really good. And for him to be the starter this year on paper makes Detroit a contender there in the North. So.
Yeah, again, the verdict's out. And I mean, you could definitely have that viewpoint. I'm just not high on Goff, and I see a quarterback that struggled to lead his team back on any kind of a comeback, which most quarterbacks struggle with, you know, and that's what I'm saying. You know, I don't see Goff as a guy that can sit back there in the pocket and just throw without the play action. Now, I say that because he hasn't been in a system that wasn't play action based. But every time they were down in the game and he had to force the ball down the field and push it, I wouldn't say I saw success consistently. Sure, there's some highlights you can put out there. I'm just not buying into Goff as a quarterback that's going to, you know, spread the offense and push, go. I just don't see it from him. But I could be wrong, but I just don't see it.
Okay. Like I said, fair enough. We will see how this goes down in this upcoming season, and I wonder what Detroit ends up doing. It's interesting, the conversation that I had, that if they do dump Goff, I wonder which way did they go. But I know definitely in the draft they're going to go quarterback. I just wonder which one they end up going after. My ideal one would be Zach Wilson. I know a lot of people are high on Trey Lance, but he didn't even play last season really due to the COVID situation. So it's like I want a fresh quarterback that has given me something recent to see and play in a stronger conference than what Trey Lance is able to do. Last quarterback that came out of there was Carson Wentz, and now you see what's going on with Carson Wentz. So I respect Trey Lance. He's an awesome player, but I think the moxie will be different. I know Barry was high on Mac Jones, trying to get Mac in there if things didn't work out with Goff. Like everything I've seen from AJ McCarron and those guys, they didn't really make the transition to the league well. I'm not so prone on a lot of the running backs or quarterbacks out of Alabama. They do great in college, but then they get to the league and it's like, what's going on? Like Trent Richardson situation, AJ McCarron, to throw another name out there. Bo Scarborough, even though I wanted to have him in Detroit, he's getting passed around the league like crazy. He's not really getting the opportunities that he should, but he hasn't panned out since he's left Alabama. So that's why I'm not high on it. And that is where I look at the system of that system in college comparison to the systems of the NFL and seeing if they could transition over. All right. So we are getting close to the tail end of the show. A couple of interesting news and notes, because I didn't want to dump too much of, what was going on for the Super Bowl, even though the Super Bowl is next week. I want to save that for next Sunday because I know it's going to get hot in here with this upcoming Super Bowl and everything going on. And I want to see it be a fair game. I want everybody to be healthy. I'm actually vowing I want to see Antonio Brown on the field during that game. I think he's going to have to go out there with a broken leg regardless because he's never been in a Super Bowl. And it's just crazy to know that Tom Brady is the first quarterback ever to have it, or the first team, let me just get past Brady, the first team to represent their team at home. Like, it's a home game for the Tampa Bay Bucks, and I didn't think it could happen. I really didn't think it could happen, and Brady did it. And it's like, what else can this dude do? Like, I don't know what else there needs to be done. I don't know what else there needs to be done. Any other quarterback scenario that you guys would like to throw around the kitchen? I'll let you get one out because we have 8 minutes left.
I wanted to talk a little bit. I just sent you a message, Ty, and I think it's something that needs to be discussed. With the whole Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford deal going down, this honestly, in my opinion, really makes it more difficult for the Houston Texans to move Deshaun Watson. And so the ownership has came out in their press conference. I think we spoke about this a little bit on Wednesday's show, if I remember correctly. But the ownership has came out in a press conference and said, look, we ain't trying to trade this man. Where did Deshaun Watson end up? Who has enough goods,
Miami,
to give up two first-round draft picks to pick up a Deshaun Watson? Like, who's doing that?
Miami's the only one that I could think of. But, yeah, because the price is going to be so high.
I don't know specifically. If it were to go down, I would have loved to see Watson try to get to Detroit. But it's like I don't think that's going down at all. So, he's begging to go to Miami. I don't even know if that's a place where he sees fit right now because Miami – it's just different. I think they got that good season to make that postseason run this year. I don't know if they have it back in the tank again. They have a back-to-back season. The potential could be there, but the way that the Bills look, I think the Bills will definitely end up being atop the AFC East. I think he would want to go to a team where he could be ready, fit, to try and make a push at a playoff appearance. I don't think he's waiting for a team to make a rebuild around him, you know, because that's what he has going on right now.
And when you put it like that, I mean, you know, if you shift your way to the NFC, I mean, maybe Washington, but I don't think Washington's looking to do. I don't think Deshaun Watson makes Washington a Super Bowl contender. It makes them better, but you know, and they'll probably.
I mean, any quarterback makes them significantly better.
Exactly, but it. That's an interesting one. But it comes down to how much are people willing to leverage, and I don't think a lot of GMs are willing to give up what it's going to take for Deshaun Watson. So the interesting part there is if no trade happens, does Deshaun Watson force their hand and try to hold out? I'm curious to see what happens there.
See, that's the thing, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was on another podcast earlier this week, and that's one thing I was talking about. You know, like, these players, you know, have a collective bargaining agreement where they can kind of force their hand. Now, obviously, the Houston Texans can fine them or whatever the case may be and make this break up a lot more messier than it needs to be. But, you know, if Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff just went for that astronomical of a price, including the contract, keep in mind Deshaun Watson just got the bag this past summer. Like, he just signed that massive deal this past summer. So it's a very similar situation. Like, I mean, Miami doesn't make sense to me. It really don't. Because the thing with Miami is you spend, you know, first-round capital and a fifth pick overall to bring in Tua, who you already have control over, who you, in my opinion, kind of gave the keys to the castle to, so to speak, prematurely. Now you're stuck in this situation, and then all of a sudden you're going to bring him in, you're going to bring Deshaun Watson in to mess with this dude's psyche. Like, you're not going to bring Deshaun Watson in on a one-year rental. You're not going to bring Deshaun Watson in, you know, on a two-year rental. You know what I'm saying? You just dropped the Tua Tagovailoa because you at fifth overall last year because you think he's going to run the club. I don't see Miami as a possible fit.
I don't see Miami as a good fit for Deshaun Watson. The only reason why that gets talked about is because they have the draft capital. That's the only thing that makes sense. Like, they have enough to bargain with.
How about Deshaun to Atlanta?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because you look at if you did that, I mean, you're gonna have to. They'd have to take Matt Ryan, Houston, just to balance out the contract money because you know Atlanta's tied to Matt Ryan for at least next year, and even if they cut him next year, it's a lot of dead money. But I don't know if Atlanta has. Does Texans want two first rounders as well? Are they willing to do that? That's tough. But I mean, that would be interesting.
Gurley, Julio, Ridley. That's a lineup. I see that's a fair fight to go up against Brady at least the next season. That's a fair fight.
Yep, that's true. That's true.
Okay, so I'm going to need you guys to get back in throughout the week. Sports City, I'm going to give you guys notice right now. The next show, I have a guest coming to the show Tuesday, and the show that we are doing Tuesday will be simulcast. So we are being syndicated as of this week, so I'm repeating, please, no foul language. We will be on air on the Internet as well, syndicated. So, like, Sports City, we finally got here. I thank God that you know, this has come to us, and having y'all here go through the storm with me as best as possible through all of the ups and downs here in the kitchen as well as within my life and things of that nature and everybody that I've, you know, generated brotherhoods with. I don't even call it friendship no more, even if I'm arguing with this dude fresh out of church, you know, like, I'm just thankful for everything that I've been given, you know. And
I hate you.
That, but see, and out of church, he says, hate, y'all. It don't matter. I'm praising the Lord right now. I ain't even going to church. But you know what? That's the evil that's inside that dude. So he can do whatever he wants to do. But Sports City, we are on a new step. Got some stuff going down in this upcoming week. All of the shows now will be 2 hours long. So these shows will get longer now. So we got to clean up. I'm saying this here now. We got to clean up our act because we are being noticed and going in a better direction. So I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. Hopefully we'll probably be adding more shows now that, you know, I'm going to try and fill the week up as best as I can. But they're telling me, no, Ty, don't wear yourself thin. So if people have ideas, we're trying to get a golf show. We got two people that want to talk golf. We got two people that want to talk hockey. So we might end up filling this whole schedule up. I think I may just delve into baseball just because I got this thing. Well, we have this thing going. Then I'll just start throwing a baseball show together too. But if you guys have any ideas, hit me up, text me, or email me. Email us at sportscitychefs@gmail.com with any ideas we can make this thing happen. I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. Shout out to Dave and Barry that came through. They both let me know that they had to jump into something, but they wanted everybody to know that, you know, their thoughts were with us for the afternoon. I'll start with you first, Norm. Thank you for stopping by the brunch. Give me a plug, closeout, shout out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut the doors here at the brunch. Norm, do we still have you? Okay, we just lost Norm. Okay, I'll come to you next series. Your thoughts on closing this show out, plug, promo, anything that you like to close out?
You know, man, it's your boy Sears repping that 412 and the 703, man. Such a pleasure to once again be here on the brunch. Yo, man, I'm in the middle of a snowstorm, you know what I'm saying? And for me, you know, the snow is really symbolic of, you know, the clean slate and kind of the passing over and the washing over that, you know, we here at Sports City have been awarded. You know, when I came to Sports City, I was chasing a dream. You know, a couple friends of mine told me to come on and, you know, and do what I love to do. And now, you know, this has kind of been the catalyst for a career change for me. And, you know, I'm very appreciative of the opportunity and excited for the opportunity of Sports City to be, you know, on a much bigger platform and do a much bigger thing. So it's fun. You know, we all love sports and we all get to do this, you know, in our free time. So I'm very appreciative. Definitely check us out. We are on the website for blogs and things. I got some stuff that I got to, you know, type up and, you know, get ready to go for this week. But time to do big things, man. You know, the scripture that says to whom much is given, much is required. We are blessed with a lot. We have a lot of knowledge and a lot of insight, you know, across the gentlemen that you know, represent here on a regular basis. So it's time to bless the people, man. Let's do what we do.
See, look, and he went from hate to speaking the words for a city. I don't understand. I don't even know what I go through with it. I'm telling you, I got a punching bag and his face on it. So I'll be tearing that thing up. I mean, I'm telling you, even the speed bag, I got Aaron with the shades on, and I cut out Malika. I don't want to hit on my nephew like that, man. I've cut him out, you know what I'm saying? But I'll be tearing them bags up, man, because this is what he put me through, man. I'm telling you, I don't know, man. All right.
We preach your kids. Watch us preach your kids, man. We preach your kids a fashion.
No, y'all dangerous. Y'all dangerous. I believe me, I know. That's why I got to give you, I got to, you know, speed you with a slingshot, you know, like, I'm not trying to feed you with no spoon or no fork. I got to feed you with a slingshot. I got to, you know, I don't want to touch the gator's mouth, man. I'm going to do this too much. All right, Eric, you know what to do. Shut this thing down as we close the doors here at the brunch.
Hey, it's been a pleasure here on the brunch with all my brothers today. Looking forward to our opportunity. We're all truly blessed, man. Let's keep doing what we do and giving the fans a real, raw, uncut sports talk, man, and nothing but the truth and having fun with it. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll see you guys back here on Tuesday. Check us out, sportscitychefs.com. We doing it, baby.
Sportscitychefs.com. Check out the website with the blog. the shows. We are on Apple as well. Barry has been putting in work, getting us everywhere. We are getting noticed all across the board. I got to give a ton of credit to Barry to, you know, give me that spark, man. And I'm back at it, and we got a radio station that's in our backs and want to work with us, love everything that we're doing, and they're hype about us. And I'm like, well, then if y'all love it, I love it. So this is what I'm talking about, especially approaching the month of November. The month of February to all of the basketball situation. I wanted to talk the All-Star game and seeing if they were going to put that together, but I'll save that for the cafe because that's coming up as well. Like I said, stay tuned to a lot of the shows that we got trying to come out. We got a golf show that potentially is coming, hockey that's potentially coming too. So there's a lot of stuff on slate for Sports City. I'm proud. I'm back at it in year 12 right now, Sports City. I'm feeling some type of way. But on that note, tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Chefs. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Woo! Connecticut.